When you read any of the Gospels, you start to see that there's this progression of opposition. It's specifically seen in Matthew's Gospel. You can see it quite clearly. Jesus does something miraculous, and the people push back. And then as the people push back, then the religious leaders push back. And ultimately, you get to a place where the religious leaders make a decision where they find themselves wanting to do away with Jesus. And that progression is not missed in Luke's gospel. There's tension that's rising. Tension between the religious leaders and Jesus. Tension between the religious leaders and the people as it triangles everybody in. Now, I want you to hold that thought or that notion just like in the front of your mind as we kind of go through this passage today. What you see here is the passage opens up in Luke chapter 1. You see on the Sabbath, while he, Jesus, was going through the grain fields with his disciples, some of them, the disciples, plucked and ate some of the heads of grain, rubbing them in their hands. And then the religious leaders are watching. They're on the sidelines. They're watching a little bit of what's going on. And you see this when they respond and say to Jesus, or rather to his disciples, why are you doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath? Why are you doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath? Now, to set this all up, Luke doesn't give us much history or context what leads up to this, but Matthew does. Matthew's gospel actually has these two incidents, these two episodes in his gospel as Luke does, and they're back to back. The grain fields and the healing of the man with the withered hand. And when Matthew sets the stage, he actually gives us some context. The disciples had been weary for some time about being a little bit different than what the Pharisees had wanted. And it ends in chapter 11 of Matthew, where Jesus says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. It was an invitation. It wasn't necessarily an invitation where Jesus was saying, hey, let me mow your lawn for you. You're tired? I'll do it. It wasn't an invitation, hey, you're busy? Let me take your kids to soccer practice. Jesus is referring to something that is burdening his disciples or the people around him, where obviously they were not able to keep it to themselves. You know how that is. When you see somebody who is burdened on the inside, you can almost tell on their face that there's something bothering them, right? And the closer you are with that person, the more of, it doesn't have to be explicit, it could be more subtle. So Jesus is seeing that there's this burden on the disciples inside that's centering around up to this point in Matthew's gospel of the conflict between Jesus, the Pharisees, his disciples, and the people about law and keeping it and obedience and all this kind of stuff, that Jesus gives this invitation, come to me and I will give you rest. So what we find ourselves doing here in this passage, or as we read, the disciples are walking through a grain field with Jesus. They get hungry, so they actually pluck some of the grain and they rub it in their hands and they eat the grain. The Pharisees say, hey, stop that. That's not lawful. And what they're doing is that they are picking up on an Old Testament law in Exodus 20. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Now, obviously, this is a little vague, right? This Old Testament law. What does it mean to keep the Sabbath? Does it mean to go to worship? Does it mean to go to synagogue? What does it mean to keep the Sabbath? And the disciples found themselves living into generations and of iterations of what it might mean to keep the Sabbath. For the Pharisees over years, maybe it started with very good intention, the Pharisees actually started to carve out exactly what it meant to keep the Sabbath. The Pharisees would tell you in three categories what it means, how far you can go, how much work you can do, and how much you can carry. Those were, and then each one of those categories could be subdivided with bullet points underneath. Incidentally, for the Sabbath law, the keep the Sabbath, for the Sabbath law, there were 39 extra rules that you could do on the Sabbath or could not do that defined what it meant to keep the Sabbath. You could not walk so far. If you found someone that was sick or bleeding or ill, you could not heal them, give them medicine. All you could do was stop them from bleeding or bandage them. You could not carry a load. You couldn't make your oxen or your donkeys carry a load so far. I mean, it was ridiculous, and it was all set with, I think, good intentions to help us define what it is. But over the centuries and over the generation, they became burdensome. The rules, the regulations, all those things became burdensome. And so when the disciples hear the Pharisees say, hey, what you're doing, you're working. What was it working? Was it plucking? No, it was the rubbing of the grain. That was the work. You could not do that even if you were hungry. And so this is how Jesus responds here. Jesus answered them. So the Pharisees are talking to the disciples. Jesus steps in. Isn't that awesome? I want Jesus to speak for me sometimes, you know? Hey, Jesus steps in, and Jesus says, have you not read? And he goes through this passage or this story about where David, and you can look this up, but it gives an example of David actually going into the temple and picking up some of the bread that was on the show table and eating it, which was unlawful for him to do. But he's really not making an argument about it was done before so we can do it today. That wasn't his argument. Do you see what Jesus is actually doing here? Have you not read? Who thinks that the Pharisees never read this? Is Jesus really saying, have you not read? No. What Jesus is telling them or asking them, have you not understood? Do you not understand what the spirit of the law is? This was a backhanded insult. So the religious leaders, even though it is not playing out in this text, I really think that what happens next is pivotal. Because what the disciples witness is possibly the religious leaders asking this question, Jesus, who do you think you are? Jesus, who do you think you are? Not academically, like in biology, tell me who do you think you are? Well, I'm a living creature. I have oxygen that's going through in blood. No. They're not asking who do you think you are. They are asking him by identity. Who do you say you are? Not what you are. Who you are. They were asking, what do you say about your identity? Jesus, you have no public office. Jesus, you are not a priest. You're not involved in a group of well-known officiators of the law like the Pharisees. You have no formal training. Who do you say you are? You insult us by implying that we don't understand Scripture. You understand their frustration. Here, Jesus is outside of his lane. This wasn't Jesus' job to do in to regulate what was appropriate actions and law and interpretations of the Sabbath. Jesus is outside his lane. This is the Pharisees' lane. This is something what the Pharisees had to do. Jesus is telling people what they can do. That was the Pharisees' job to do that. This is outside his lane. Giving people permission to do things that where they were normally not allowed to do or supposed to do. See, the Pharisees had a good idea of what other people thought of him. What other people said who Jesus was. To the crowds, Jesus was an entertainer. Well, let's go see what Jesus did. We don't have anything to do today. Let's go see what Jesus does today. This will rock our world a little bit. To the sick, Jesus was a healer. To the hungry, Jesus was their provider. To the marginalized, Jesus was a friend. The religious leaders, the Pharisees, they had a pretty good idea of what people were saying about Jesus. In fact, they even knew what they were saying about Jesus. What did we find out last week? When Jesus says, so that you may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sin, what happened? Jesus was accused of being a blasphemer. You're not God. And Jesus, to them, was a threat. Jesus became an enemy to them. Who, Jesus, do you say you are? Does Jesus ever really answer that question? Think about this for a second. Does Jesus really answer the question, who do you say you are? Think through the scriptures. He asks other people, his disciples, what do people say who I am? Who do people say I am, doesn't he? In just a few chapters in Luke 9, he's going to ask his disciples that very question. He asks the disciples, who do you say that I am? But really, is that important, what people say about Jesus? Is it important that really we know what Jesus' disciples said about him? Look, we even have a story in Matthew 11 about John the Baptist asking Jesus who he is. He's in prison. He sends his disciples over to Jesus with this question. Are you the one we should expect or that we have hoped for, or should we expect someone else? In other words, Jesus, are you who you say you are? And Jesus doesn't even answer the question there. It's important for the disciples, or rather the religious leaders, to know the answer to this question, because the answer of this question is what he says about himself is what they will use to ultimately accuse him. This is what the religious leaders want. They want him to say something that they could say, look at this man as a blasphemer, as a liar, as one who is bringing himself as equal to God. Look at him. Look at what he says about himself. And they wanted to accuse him on that matter. But back to what I said just a moment ago. Really, we're all friends here. Does Jesus actually ever say who he is? And he does. He does. In John chapter 8, with the religious leaders, he has this phrase that he says, before Abraham was, I am. It's an Old Testament reference to the very name of God that God gave to Moses in Exodus chapter 3. Or I'll just look in the book of Luke and see everywhere he says, the Son of Man, the Son of Man, the Son of Man. You know Jesus is talking about himself when he says Son of Man. You know how you know? Because when Judas comes to betray Jesus, when he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, Judas does what? Kisses him. What does Jesus say? How is it that you betray the Son of Man with a kiss? He's talking about himself. So you want to know what Jesus says about himself? Let's look through the book of Luke here, and you can look and see everywhere he says the Son of Man, he is identifying who he is. I mean, last week, he is the one who is able to forgive sin on earth. He has the authority. This is his lane. This is his jurisdiction. He proved this by healing the paraplegic that was dropped before him, laid before him through the roof. He proves that he has this jurisdiction. And the reason that this is important, it's because if Jesus cannot forgive sin, then the cross is meaningless. So Jesus is saying who he is. It is important for us to see who Jesus says he is. He is someone who can forgive sin. Today, in our passage, he says that the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. And understanding what we, like we did last week with authority, what Lord is, this is not in the sense of deity. He's not saying, I am the God of the Sabbath. He's talking about Lord in the sense of ruler, as a landlord. Right? We use that. He's in charge of this. And so he, as the ruler, when he says, I'm the ruler of the Sabbath, the Pharisees, that was their job. And can you imagine the tension that they felt, the anger that they felt bubbling up inside of him for those days that passed between this event and the next event? Religious leaders, they used this power, this lording of the Sabbath law over the people because they were able to control people. They were able to define those laws. They were able to demand obedience. The law became their instrument of power over the people. And Jesus is taking it away. Oh, think of this for a second. Just think of the shallowness for just a second of the religious leaders. They heard a few weeks before, they heard Jesus say that he has the authority to forgive sin. And what bugged them was it was blasphemous. But you know what? That didn't cross over into their lane. They were able to live with that. Isn't that amazing? Jesus says that he has the power to forgive sin. And the Pharisees were just going to be angry about it. But after Jesus makes a point to say, I am Lord of the Sabbath, I am Pharisees taking away your power, what happens? They want to destroy Jesus. Oh my goodness. Do you see how horrible that is? The slope that these religious leaders were on, the straw that broke the camel's back was when Jesus crossed over into their lane. You want to know who I am? I am the one who is Lord, ruler, authority over the Sabbath. Now, what you may not know is keeping the Sabbath was important for Jewish people. In fact, one of the Old Testament prophets said that the reason the Jewish people went into exile is because they did not keep the Sabbath. So they're very careful to keep the Sabbath, lest they go into exile, lest God turns his back upon them. Sabbath law held a special place for the Jews to follow. You know, for us today, Sabbath, it's a distant memory of stores being closed on Sunday. That's gone. It's just a faint memory. Some people might do it, other people may not. But for the Jew, there was no option. For Jesus' contemporaries, the law about the Sabbath was one of the chief badges that the Jewish people used to identify that they were special people in God's eyes. It was a sign to them. It was a sign to the people around them that they were God's people. And this had been instilled in them over the years and over the generations, over the decades, that keeping the law was important because keeping the law meant you were still in good graces with God. Worth, according to the Pharisees, according to the legalistic way they took keep the Sabbath and made it burdensome to the point where Jesus steps onto the scene and says, if you are burdened or heavy laden, come to me and I will give you rest. This burden that these folks felt and were struggling with, it became something that encapsulated them with all the extra rules, and they were careful to do what was right on the Sabbath for fear that it would push back on their relationship with God, that they would no longer be his special people. For the first century religious leader, for the Pharisee, religion, keeping the rules, usurped relationship. Religion usurped the relationship that God intended. So that kind of sets the stage and the tension for the very next thing Luke says. Tells a story about Jesus being in the synagogue. There's no story in this passage about someone being lowered through a roof. There's no commotion outside where somebody is trying to get to Jesus. Jesus is teaching, and Luke says, in the audience were the religious leaders and a man whose right hand was withered. Now talk about value being taken away. Not only was value given in the sight of God by keeping the law, but your value with each other was what you were able to do. What you were able to offer, and having the right hand withered meant that he couldn't provide, he couldn't have a job, he couldn't do things that were productive. He had no value in the people's eyes, and his heart undoubtedly became dry and withered too. So this man is withered, the muscles are dry, and it's inactive, and he can't use it, and it's incurable, and the Pharisees are there, and they're waiting to see if Jesus would heal on the Sabbath. So now they are trying to trap him. You've crossed over into our lane too many times. Now we're going to sit and wait. Incidentally, isn't it interesting that the Pharisees said, if Jesus would? What would be different if Luke said, if Jesus could? They had no doubt that Jesus could heal this man. They were worried that he would heal this man in the parameters of a Sabbath, which was on their lane. So they watch. Jesus, seeing that they are doing this, asks the man to stand. Asks the man to come and stand before him, knowing their thoughts. And then Jesus says to the Pharisees, I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to harm, to save a life or destroy it? Now Jesus wants them to get caught. Of course, they remain silent. And he waits for this answer, and then he says to this man, stretch out your hand. And he did so, and his hand was restored. And then the disciples start to sense that the religious leaders are angry, furious. The conversation has now come to, what are we going to do with Jesus? Isn't it interesting that sometimes we even find ourselves wondering what Jesus could do. Wondering what Jesus maybe would do. Based on our identification or how we describe who Jesus is. The song that Helen sang, Waymaker, you are promise keeper. That is our definition of who God is. You go through the Old Testament. The way that they describe God is they use words to describe what he is doing. God, you are my fortress. You are my rock. In other words, the enemy's coming. You are the wall between me and my enemy. You are the rock, even though the land around me is shifting and sinking. You are what you are doing. And there's these descriptions of who God is. But let me tell you something this morning that's so very important. If you've never actually asked this question, consider it this week. Jesus, who do you say you are? That question right there. What you think about Jesus, about what Jesus said about himself, determines how we respond. What you think about what Jesus said about himself determines to what degree you believe what Jesus says about himself. What you think about what Jesus says about himself determines to what degree you believe that he could / would do. And maybe one of the most dramatic ramifications or implications of us dealing and wrestling with this question, what Jesus says about himself, what do you think what Jesus said about who he said about himself, but what it does in us determines how you respond to his invitation. Friends, if Jesus says to you, come to me and I will give you rest, if you truly do not believe that Jesus is rest, then you will never go to Jesus for rest. If Jesus gives you the invitation that he did in John chapter 7 in the at the feast where he stands up and says, come to me, all you who are thirsty and heavy, or and they're dry and parched, and drink from me. If you never believe that Jesus is the source of living water, what he said about himself to the woman at the well, you will never go to him for water, for refreshment. You can't. You always find yourself kind of tiptoeing around it. And it's just not about what Jesus says about himself. It's what the scriptures say about Jesus. When Jesus is described in Romans 8 as the one who's the end of the law of righteousness, what Paul is saying here, throughout generations, the Pharisees have used the law as the act of righteousness. You get right before God by following the law. And when Romans says Jesus is the end, in Romans 10:4, Jesus is the end of that. If we don't believe that Jesus fulfilled the law, as he says about himself in Matthew chapter 5, then we will never find ourselves not striving to do. See, what you think about what Jesus said about himself is important, because it'll determine what you believe about what he says about you. You are sacred. You have worth. It will determine to what degree you believe what he could or would do. And it determines to what degree you respond to his invitation. So friends, maybe you're thirsty. Maybe your heart is quenched or is parched. Maybe your spirit is down. Maybe you just need to re-examine the forgiveness, the Jesus, the Son of Man, has the authority to forgive sin. Maybe you think God has not forgiven you. Maybe you think it's something that is determined, or the catalyst of God being our forgiver is determined by what we do. What would change if you at least stepped one step closer to maybe, just maybe, it's not about what I do. It's not about the religion, the establishment, about following the rules, about being good in church. It's about the relationship that God wants to have with you. What difference would it make? I'm wrestling with this question. I'm making notes for myself on little cards that I'm carrying around, and I invite you to do that too. Gracious God, I pray that as we live into the Lord of the Sabbath, the ruler of the Sabbath, we live into this idea of giving ourselves at least the opportunity to see things from a different perspective. God, I know I grew up in a church that was full of rules. If you wanted to be a disciple or a follower, there's just a bunch of things that you had to tick off on your to-do list. And God, there's nothing wrong with that. Those are very important. But God, what sets the stage for us is not what we do, it's what you, God, have offered us. And so I pray, oh God, through the power of the Holy Spirit, you will take what is from you and weave it into our hearts. And what is not from you, you'll allow to fall to the ground and shatter. All for your glory, oh God, I pray. Amen.